Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. Because that's what it's all about, right? How amazing to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. If you want to join me today, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. I would love to hear what's on your mind, what's weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, or compulsive eating, any kind of unhealthy, unhappy eating, is not food. Food is not the problem. Food is actually the solution to the problem. The real problem is what's eating at you. So let me start with a question about what's driving your binge eating. When it comes to your relationship with food, does it seem as if you're in the passenger seat and the driver is completely out of control? If you can relate, then I have good news, because I'm going to help you identify what is driving the behavior of binge eating or stress eating or any kind of unhealthy, unhappy eating. And I'm going to give you two crucial steps to change that you can put into practice right away. So for starters, imagine yourself as a car. Yes, a car. Now, if that seems a bit weird, think about this. We refer to car bodies. Why is that? Why do cars have bodies? And we take our cars to the body shop for repairs. So not so weird, right? And if you're traveling on the proverbial road of life, keep in mind you are not alone. You are not alone in that vehicle. There are usually three basic parts to all of us: the self, the critic, and the soother supporter. So the self is the part of you that has needs, wants, wishes, emotions, conflicts. So when you say, oh, I feel really upset, I'm mad, I'm sad, I'm afraid, I'm anxious, that's yourself talking. When you say happy, that's yourself talking. But the critic informs you of all of your transgressions. It's relentlessly judgmental. It's critical. It's sometimes downright nasty. And by the way, if you refer to yourself in the second person, it is usually the critic talking. And what I mean by that is when you say to yourself, you have no willpower, you're never going to lose weight, you're a loser, fill in the blank, I am sure that you can. That's the critic. Talking to yourself in second person, that's the critic. Unless you're talking to yourself like this: you are such a good person. You're doing your best. You're doing the best you can given your situation. That's not the critic. That's the soother supporter. That's the part that provides understanding, soothing, and support. Often, that's the part that shows up for other people, but not for you. I can't tell you how many times I've seen in my support group, people will say to each other, oh, you're doing the best you can. I'm just so in awe of your tenacity, and you're really, you know, you're hanging in there and you're showing up for yourself. And then when it's their turn to talk, it's like criticism, criticism, criticism. I was like, wait, what happened to that person when you were talking to so-and-so? Where's that person? So the soother supporter is the part that provides understanding, soothing, and support for yourself. So which of these is in your driver's seat? Chances are, if you're listening to this show, chances are it's the critic. Now, we all need a little bit of an inner critic to make sure that we make good choices. But, you know, ideally, that critic should maybe stay in the back seat, or even better, the trunk, as far back away from the driver's seat as you can get. That's where the critic needs to be. You know, keeps us in line, but not drives our life. Okay, so how does all this relate to food issues? When the critic is at the wheel, it is not pretty. It's horrible. It's hell. For many people, the critic strikes exactly when they need the most support, right? For a lot of people, they've learned that when they need to be the most gentle with themselves, when they need to be the most kind to themselves, that's when they attack themselves. So that leads to using food for comfort or distraction from the pain. And then, by the way, then the critic is there to judge you again. How could you have eaten that? You failed. Or all the horrible things that the critic can say. If you eat something for comfort, then the critic rears its ugly head again and it attacks you again. So if you speak to yourself in a critical way, you feel bad. And when you feel bad, you're more likely to use food for comfort. And if you don't soothe and support yourself with words, you're likely to use food for that purpose. And where is the supporter in all of this? Probably mute. Not even in the car. It's in someone else's car. So let's get the supporter behind the wheel. Here's what to do. Okay, so step one, recognize who's driving. First of all, does that critic remind you of anyone you know? Did anyone ever talk to you that way? Or did anyone talk to other people that way in your presence? Where did you learn to relate to yourself that way? These are a lot of questions I'm throwing at you, but they're important questions for you to consider, because this critic did not just come from the air. The critic came from somewhere. And there are two ways that people develop an inner critic. One is when they're criticized. So, someone's always criticizing them, and then they internalize that critic and then start criticizing themselves. So if you have someone who's always telling you, oh, you're not doing that well enough, or you could do better, or you didn't do that well enough, you basically aren't trying hard enough, you're this, you're that, down the line, they start saying that to themselves. So what starts off as relational between you and another person becomes internal between different parts of you. So that's one way that people internalize critics. The other way is when there's not enough boundaries in when they're growing up, when things are just too kind of loosey-goosey and it feels scary to not have boundaries. And so what kids do in the absence of feeling like a sense of safety and containment is they create this critic to give them a sense of boundaries, and they often create the harshest critic that you can possibly imagine. So, is that mean voice really you? Maybe it belongs to someone else, parent, sibling, teacher, grandparent or aunt. It could be anyone that maybe you grew up with. It doesn't have to be family. A lot of times people have teachers who are really important to them at a certain stage. And when those teachers are harsh and critical, that becomes even more important than even what parents tell you. So think about that. Who was mean to you? Identify the source of that inner critic and tell it to shush. Tell it to shut the F up. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Shut up. It no longer has permission to drive you crazy. Yes, drive you crazy. See what I did there? I can't help myself. Banish it to the back seat. Get that critic out of your car. Well, maybe in the trunk, like I said. So step two, be a friend to yourself. Think about how you express support for others. Chances are you're caring, understanding, helpful, friendly. You're a great friend, right? I bet you are. I know you are. Okay, how about this? What if you spoke to yourself that way? Try it. Just try telling yourself what you would tell any of your friends. Try it. You will see a difference. Talk to yourself as if you were someone you love. In fact, be someone you love to yourself. Love yourself. Like yourself. Be nice to yourself. You will feel better. And when you feel supported by yourself, you're way less likely to eat for comfort or distraction. When you are driven, there I go again. When you are driven by a wish to be supportive and understanding to yourself as well as to others, you will stop using food to cope. Okay, what are your thoughts about this? Let me know. 818-602-4929. Tell me about your inner critic, and let's see if we can banish it to the trunk or the back seat or something. Okay, let's talk happiness, right? This is something I hear a lot. People say things like, losing weight is definitely going to make me happy. If I stop binging, when I stop binging, when I stop overeating, when I stop eating cookies, when I stop eating carbs, when I stop whatever, I'm going to be happy. Or they say, you know what, in order to be happy, I really need a, oh, hold that thought. Here's a caller. Hi, caller, you're on with Dr. Nina. Is this Nicole?
This is me. Do you know my phone number?
I know your phone number. Yes, I do.
How's it going?
Okay. So how did you do with what we talked about last week?
Yeah, so I was calling to kind of just, like, update and express. Well, I feel better now. I'm okay now. I rekindled my relationship with my sister. That made me feel a lot better. Yeah, I think just working out everything that, like, wasn't going 100% in my life kind of fixed the food thing problems, too. So it kind of worked itself out, I guess. Or I worked it out.
Oh, that was a good correction. Yeah, it didn't work things. It didn't work out. You worked it out. So take ownership of that, and that's great. And I guess, you know, tell me more. How was it for you that by addressing the true underlying conflicts you had in your life, how did that help you with the food stuff and the 2 pounds and all of that?
I guess. Well, I think some of it is also like, okay, so yeah, I just feel like happier. I feel like less critical of myself. I have other things to focus on. I'm like super busy with a new part-time job that I'm doing, and that's making me happy. I'm around young, fun people, which I'm enjoying. I just feel like I kind of shifted my life, so the food shifted too, kind of.
Yes.
And then I stopped focusing on it so much. I feel like the more I focus on it, that's when it, like, it's bad. But, like, when I'm busy with other stuff and, like, actually focusing on my life and not obsessing over the food, it just, like, works out.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
When you deal with what's eating at you and focus on that, you stop using food first for comfort or distraction, or you stop focusing on food and weight and body image and all that also as a distraction.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Well, I prefer the word liberating to crazy.
Yeah, I like that. It's liberating. That's a positive word. It is liberating, but it's hard to make that shift. Like, I almost feel like it happened subconsciously, because I feel like the more I was consciously trying to do it, I could not do it because I was still uber focusing on it. So it's kind of like a natural thing you have to just, like, let happen, and you can't really, like, make it happen.
Well,
like, you can make moves towards that direction, but then you just kind of have to, like, let go. So that's, at least that's how I felt.
Well, It's sort of this process where first you have to really, really pay attention and be conscious and try. It's like, I don't know if you've ever tried to play an instrument, but like when you have you ever tried to play piano or anything like that?
Yeah, piano.
Okay, so So you know when you first start learning piano and you have to think really hard about, okay, what finger goes to what key and how do I do this and what's happening, and you're really, really, really focused on what you're doing with your hands and with each finger, and you're thinking and thinking.
Yeah.
And you have to practice and practice and practice. Eventually, you just sit down at a piano and you don't have to think. You just automatically do it. So that's kind of the process.
Your analogies, Dr. Nina, are so on point. It's like crazy because I actually play piano. And so you're right. Now I just sit at the piano and just play, and I don't think about, like, the keys or, like, the song just, like, goes. Like, I just play. So So you're saying it kind of just becomes innate. You have to practice and focus and practice and focus. And finally, like, it just comes to you naturally to the point where you don't even have to think about it.
Exactly. And a neuropsychologist would tell you, well, you're creating new, you know, neuro pathways in your brain with these thoughts. And that is what you're doing. And so when you have one neuro pathway, it's like I created this analogy for someone, which is the analogy of skiing. So if you're used to skiing down, you know, one particular side of the slope, and it's really easy to go mm-hmm. down that ski path, that's the one that you uh-huh. naturally go on. To create a new ski path mm-hmm. through new snow, I mean, it's very hysterical that I'm making this analogy because I don't ski. So I can't, I'm going with faith that I know yeah. what I'm talking about. But to create a new ski path, you gotta, you know, go through new snow, and it's hard, and it's not as easy right. as the original one. But the more that you do it, the second ski path eventually becomes easier to go down than the first.
And
it's practice.
Yeah. It makes sense. It's harder for me to relate to this one because I don't ski either, but I still get what you're trying to say.
Or working out. Like, you know, and I don't know if you remember the first time you went to the gym, or, you know, you're like, okay, what do I do with this equipment? It hurts. This is awkward. What the heck? And you're thinking. And eventually what happens?
Yeah. I love it. And also, I think there's something to be said about, like, women and, like, different times of the month. You know what I mean? Like, I really think that has a true effect too, and like I want to work on not getting too critical or too like hyper focused. Like, you know, if I'm 2 pounds heavier or like whatever, like their hormones and stuff are a real thing, right? Like,
yes,
your cycle is a real thing, and so I think it's also good to just be cognizant of that, you know, and not beat myself up over that, because sometimes your body's like actually doing things, you know.
So how are you going? What steps do you need to take to not beat yourself up? Let's see if we can create a strategy. How can you not beat yourself up the next time you get on the scale and it registers as 2 pounds more?
Well, I don't get on the scale because I hate the scale, but I kind of just feel it in my clothes. But I maybe just like loving myself no matter what, and remembering the things I love about myself. That exercise you put me that you gave me a few weeks ago on the radio, when you said what do you love about yourself that has nothing to do with your weight or how you look, right?
Yes.
Maybe just focusing on those things and the things that, you know, I do love about myself that have nothing to do with the way I look, and just like channeling that and remembering. I don't know if this is a good one. What do you think about just like things like this is temporary? Like,
yes,
my body's going through something.
Yes.
It's temporary. Like, I'll get through this. And I'm doing the best I can with the circumstances. I like that one too. I'm doing the best I can.
These are all very good things. And I would also suggest that list that you made of the qualities you like about yourself that has nothing to do with your physical appearance, I would write it down in as nice a font as you can, or your best handwriting. Okay. And I would make copies, and I would keep it different places so that you see and can be reminded of that. Don't just rely on yourself to remember it. Have it somewhere where you can see it.
Yeah. Can I just ask, can I say one more thing?
Of course.
Before we hang up?
Yeah, ask me anything.
So I am so upset. Like, I've noticed that I'm really obsessed with physical appearance, to the point where, like, even when I go on dates, like, I will be uber critical of their weight if they're a little bit overweight, what they're wearing. Like, I'm just, I don't know how to get out. I'm just realizing that it really is so important to me that I'm so critical of other people too, not just of myself. Like,
okay, it's good that you're recognizing it. And I like to say that when we talk about these things, it's in a judgment-free way. So you're in the judgment-free zone when you're talking to me. All right, we're not going to judge the fact that you're judgmental. Okay.
Okay.
First of all, I recall last week you were telling me how your family is very judgmental and very hyper-focused on weight and appearance, right?
Yeah.
So I would say you learned how to look at yourself and others because that's what you've been surrounded by, right?
Yeah.
So what does it mean to you? What does it mean if someone else or you is not, I guess, perfect?
Oh, perfect. No, but I can tell you what it means to me. Like when someone's overweight or like they don't eat healthy or they're not like put, like they just don't care, it makes me feel like they don't care about themselves because they're not taking care of themselves. Like if they're okay, like stuffing their face with bread and butter or like, you know, I know you're saying bread and butter is not bad. I know, but I'm saying like it makes me feel like they're not, they don't value themselves. Like they're not taking care of themselves. They're like, so they don't care.
There's
like,
a presumption that if someone's eating bread and butter at the at dinner, which by the way is a normal healthy thing to do, and I, you know, stuffing your face with bread and butter, you know, is at what point are you stuffing? Is it when they eat one piece, two piece pieces? Like, at what point does that judgment kick in?
I guess like three pieces.
Okay, of like usually bread at a restaurant is pretty small, right? So
yeah, I guess.
So okay. Yeah. So there. So first of all.
I guess it's not even the bread and, sorry, maybe bread and butter is not a good example to use, but if they tell me they eat like fast food or like they go to Jack in the Box or like whatever, like I'm already turned off because I'm like, you eat fast food, like why? Like, you know,
well,
which is also a judgment.
What other reasons are there why people might eat fast food other than they don't care about themselves? What are some
They're
other?
They're in a rush, they don't have time, or they don't have money. And they just want, they need to get a fast, cheap meal. I don't know. Is that wrong?
Those are all very valid reasons why someone would go to fast food. Yes. Rather than they don't care about themselves. Anything else? What else comes to mind?
They like delicious food and they don't gain weight.
They like it. Maybe they're not aware. Not everybody is so aware about nutrition.
Like, yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
You know, people who've been raised in a family where there's this like magnifying glass on everything you put in your mouth are very aware of nutrition. But that is not true of everybody.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
So
how can I get over that? Because I think that like, I need to get over it. Like I'm recognizing that it's my issue, that I'm just putting a because I feel like there's been a magnifying glass on me my whole life. I am putting that magnifying glass on everybody that I meet and encounter as well. And then being super judgmental, which I don't like, and I want to change.
Okay. And I want to acknowledge you for having the courage to see something in yourself that you don't like and that you want to change. That takes courage.
Yeah.
So I just, you know,
I
just honor that in yourself. And we all have things about ourselves that are not, you know, they're not delightful, that don't delight us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we all need, it's tough to look at that, but it's good. That's how we grow, right? So don't have judgment on the fact that, again, that you have these judgments. So I think identifying that you are making an assumption about them, like the meaning is they don't care about themselves. They have, what did you say, low self-esteem or whatever, that if they're eating junk food or they're eating bread or they're just making unhealthy food choices, your assumption is something about why. And to catch that assumption and ask yourself, what else could it be? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And what's and then
they're not aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not aware of the nutrition as much as I am.
Mm-hmm.
They just think it's delicious. Maybe they don't gain weight as fast as I do, so it doesn't really matter. They can enjoy the good food, and I guess those are the main. and they don't have time.
Yeah.
They're in a rush. They don't want to spend a lot of money. I don't know.
Yeah, all of those things are all reasons why people go to eat fast food and junk food. And
like, I'd rather starve than eat fast food.
But most people would not say that they would rather starve than eat fast food. Most people would be like, I'm going to get me some fast food now because otherwise I'm going to starve. Right? That's how most people are. Like, I don't want to starve. I want to eat something. So your relationship to food is different from theirs. And if you're turned off, it's because of the meaning. They don't care about themselves. They must have low self-esteem. It becomes about their character rather than maybe their ability to gratify hunger, their lack of knowledge about nutrition, all kinds of things.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, that's very helpful. Thank you. It's something that I am, now I kind of know what it means. Like, I was cognizant, now I know what it means. And maybe I can work past it.
Yeah.
And then is the clothing thing also related?
The clothing thing when people don't maybe, what do you mean the clothing thing?
Like how they dress. Like I'm uber focused on like, it just bothers me. Like if someone is, like I said, a little bit overweight or like doesn't like dress nice, like it bothers me. Like it, and we address the little bit overweight, eats fast food, blah, blah, blah part. But I'm asking if the way they dress is related to that or if that's like a separate issue.
Well, and are we talking about primarily guys or just
both?
Okay,
but I guess both bother me, but more guys, I guess. I guess more men.
Well, I just have to tell you that on my first date with my husband, he wore a god-awful pair of jeans. And I was just like, who, what, no. So after some time of dating him, I was like, hey, I have to tell you, those are not the most flattering jeans in the world, and I would love to see you in some flattering jeans. Let's go shopping. And now I just buy his clothes. I exaggerate. I make sure that the jeans. Yeah. Everything else he's good at.
Okay. Good.
Okay, so again, what does it mean to you? And what are some reasons why? Actually, before we go to what it means to you, what are some reasons why someone doesn't dress well or dress as you might?
They don't know better. They haven't been taught. It's not like it doesn't like, yeah, I guess it matters to me because I like my mom really cared about it. So she raised my sister and I to really care about it. But maybe they were raised differently. Maybe they were raised to like really care about like sports or like other things, which is good. So maybe it's like it's a fallacy, but I don't know. I guess to me, it also means like, I don't want to say they're not cultured or they're not like social, but I feel like if you're in like a certain like social circle or like you're cultured, like you kind of know how to dress and what to wear and you know what's in fashion and like it matters.
Well,
but maybe that's not the most important thing. Like I'm cognizant that it's not the most important thing, but it still matters to me.
Well, here's another reason why people maybe aren't fashionable.
Okay.
They don't want to conform to what everyone else is wearing. Maybe they're an anti-conformist. Maybe they don't care. Maybe they just have their own style and or lack of style, and it makes no difference to them whatsoever. Maybe they don't want to be like look like everyone else.
Yeah. But I guess the meaning to me is that that's something I don't like because I guess I want to be with somebody. Now I'm talking about a mate. Want to be with someone that is in the social scene. And okay, now I'm just asking for too much. I don't know. I sound obnoxious. So I'm just gonna stop.
Well, now you're judging yourself. But there's levels of lack of fashion. But I think it's you want to be with a partner that you feel proud of course. I mean, if he's, yeah. you know, it depends on how egregious these sartorial choices are of his. But, you know, yeah. he may not be fashionable, but is he, you know, does he dress decently? Is he open to maybe changing his style a yeah. little bit? Maybe. The
Yeah.
And I can tell you, my now husband of 14 years, wait, 15 years, oh my God, 15 years. Wow. I hope he's not listening. David, I'm sorry. He was open to it. He's like, okay, I want you to like how I look in jeans, so let's go. So, okay. you know, if they're open to it, people can change. People can adapt. Don't make a judgment about how they are or what it means based on when you meet them at some particular time, right?
Okay, fair.
Yeah.
I have some work to do.
Well, let me know how it goes. And, you know,
I will.
Also put that critic of yourself in your trunk, okay? Trunk of your car, as far back as you can go.
Okay. That's my inner critic, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Inner and outer.
Okay. Oh, thank you, Dr. Nina.
You are so welcome, Nicole. Let me know how it goes.
Bye. I will. Okay, talk soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Good for Nicole. It's hard to see things in ourselves that we don't like. It's really hard. And to be able to actively want to recognize that and change that takes guts. So, you know, I encourage all of you, like, just to, if there's something you don't like about yourself, don't beat yourself up. That's being critical. Just go, okay, be curious. Where does this come from? How can I change it? Because when we're critical, all we do is we make ourselves feel bad. And then, of course, we feel bad. What do? Oh, there's food to make us feel better. When we're curious, we're more likely to find answers. Why do we feel this way? What else can we do? How else can we think? How else can we respond? Then you find answers. Then you find new ways of being with yourself. Then you make yourself feel good. Okay. So, back to happiness. Most people think that they will be happy when they lose weight, stop binging, you know, or other things. Get a new job, get a boyfriend, get married, have a kid, get a new job, go on a vacation. I'll be happy when I do that. But actually, it's the other way around. It is getting happy that makes you stop binging or stress eating or overeating. It's getting happy that makes you lose weight, not the other way around. Because if you think that when you lose weight, your life will improve, you'll be more confident, you're more outgoing, relaxed, things will be better, you'll be happier, then you know you believe that by controlling the number on the scale, you manage aspects of your life, including your happiness. And that is just not the case. So I was just reading in Health Magazine, actually, Health Magazine, March issue, about happiness. And a lot of different people, different experts in happiness, wrote about why they think, you know, what leads to happiness. Here is one. This is from the author of The Power of Meaning, Finding Fulfillment in a World Obsessed with Happiness, Emily Estahani Smith. Sorry, Emily, for butchering your name. She says, don't chase happiness. Look for meaning instead. She says, happiness is typically defined as a positive emotional state, that smiley face ideal. People quote Aristotle as saying, a good life is a happy life. But really, the Greek word that Aristotle uses in his teaching, I'm about to butcher this Greek word, eudaimonia. Eudaimonia better translates to flourishing than happy. And when you read him, he specifically makes a distinction between flourishing and happy. Flourishing is living a virtuous life where you pursue excellence in your work, relationships, and community. Doing those things might not make you feel happy all the time. They're hard. They can be stressful. Being a parent or a leader takes effort, right? But it leaves you with a deeper sense of meaning. So Emily advocates for the pursuit of a meaningful life rather than chasing happiness. And I love that. At the pursuit of a meaningful life rather than chasing happiness. And research backs her up. When people pursue eudaimonia, sorry for any Greek people out there for how I am butchering this word, they end up with greater well-being. They're actually healthier. They live longer. People who believe their lives are meaningful have less of the brain plaque associated with Alzheimer's. They're less likely to develop cardiovascular disease. So, what does it take to create meaning? That's the million-dollar question. One of the key aspects of a meaningful life is what she calls transcendence. One of those rare moments when you step outside yourself and feel connected to a higher reality. And by the way, that higher reality can be whatever you want. It doesn't have to be God. It doesn't have to be spiritual. That it could happen on a trip to the Grand Canyon or while you're meditating or sitting in church or synagogue or just outside anywhere. A transcendent experience exists on a wide range. It's about feeling connected to the world, and that can change you. I think that's pretty beautiful. Here's another someone who weighs in on, pardon the weight metaphor, analogy, someone who weighs in on happiness. She says, to be happy, be brave. And this is the author of Okay, Fine, Whatever, The Year I Went from Being Afraid of Everything to Only Being Afraid of Most Things. This is Courtney Hameister. She says her former job hosting Livewire, a nationally syndicated radio variety show, was a dream for her. She was paid to write comedy. She met fascinating people. She had actual fans who loved the show and told her so. I mean, who gets to have fans, right? How awesome is that? But it was so anxiety-producing that for 2 weeks out of every month, she was filled with dread about the next live show. Even so, she did it for almost a decade. And until the night before her 9th anniversary show, she had a massive anxiety attack that would not go away. It lasted 2 days. The show had brought so many extraordinary things and so many amazing people into her life. She thought she should be happy. Everyone thought she was lucky. And when everyone thinks you're lucky, it takes you a lot longer to realize how miserable you actually are. The anxiety attack, she said, was the world's most unpleasant wake-up call. And it still took her a couple of weeks to let the hosting job go, her dream job. She had to let it go. She said her whole body changed the moment she decided to let it go. Her shoulders dropped. She could breathe again. But she wasn't immediately happy. In fact, she was immediately out of sorts and wondering what the hell to do with her life. So what sparked her Okay, Fine, Whatever project is that she wanted to see if she could teach her brain that everything was going to be okay by doing things that scared her and then writing about them to process the experiences. So instead of thinking, oh, that sounds terrifying when confronted with a new and weird experience, she thought, well, that sounds interesting. And for her, that was enough to make a difference. So does she think there's a link between bravery and happiness? She says 100%. Regret and complacency are bitches. That's what she says. That's literally a quote. Regret and complacency are bitches. No one wants to hang out with them. And fear invites them in over and over again. Bravery is a daunting word. Trying to make a new friend as an adult takes bravery. Going to Thailand when flying gives you panic attacks takes bravery. Letting the person you're dating know that you care about them before you know how they feel about you, that takes bravery. These are things you're not going to win medals for. But when you add them all up at the end of your life, you're going to define whether it was a life worth living. So she said she thinks people striving for some ideal happiness is one of the greatest causes of unhappiness in the world. If we strive for anything, it should be a healthy mind and body, a sense of purpose, and the ability to give and receive love without reservation or expectation. That seems as close to true contentment as she could get. She also says cheese makes her happy, but that's a whole other story. Okay, so, you know, let me know what you think about this idea of happiness. Happiness is not, you know, it's not caused by losing weight or changing your body, because the thing is, all that happens is you change your body. That's all that happens. Maybe you're happy for like a little bit. Maybe you can go shopping and buy clothes that you feel comfortable in and feel cute in, and maybe that makes you happy, but you know, it doesn't last, because you're still you. You're you, you're just in a different body, or, you know, the same body, just smaller. I remember a friend, I think I've talked about this, the friend who she really wanted this, you know, really super expensive car. And she thought that when she got the car, she would feel really good and she would feel just better and happier and more wonderful. And she got the car, and for maybe like, I don't know, a couple days or a couple weeks or something, she was like, yeah, I love my car. And then it was like, okay, I'm just getting into my car to drive somewhere. It didn't make her happy anymore. Happiness, trite but true, is an inside job. Okay. All right. Here is a question. Here's a question from Dubai Magazine in the United Arab Emirates. How cool is that? Dubai Magazine asked me a question. So they said, we in the UAE tend towards excess, whether it's eating too much or shopping and spending too much. What drives people to compulsive behaviors? Great question. Okay, so it is different for each individual person, but these compulsive behaviors are all ways of trying to resolve problems or conflicts through behavior, resolve or distract from. So sometimes binging on food or spending too much money can express what's missing in your life. And think about how many expressions utilize food metaphors to describe a feeling of yearning. We say we're hungry for love. We're starving for attention. We're, you know, binge watching something. We can't get enough of something. So loneliness can feel like emptiness, and food symbolically fills the void. So does stuff. So does stuff that you shop for. Lots of times people will do with food what they do with money, but not everyone does. Often people will say that they binge on food, and then they'll say they have some kind of addiction to shopping, and they buy stuff and they can't stop buying stuff, and all that stuff fills their homes the way food fills their stomachs, symbolically filling a void. So if you feel sad and in need of comfort, but nobody is there to console you, you can turn to food to provide a feeling of comfort. Sometimes that's where retail therapy comes in, right? There's a reason it's called retail therapy. If you're in an unsatisfying relationship, you could turn to food to satisfy your unmet needs. If you're in a situation you can't control, you can focus on powerlessness over food instead of feeling powerless about the situation. Maybe you go out and shop as a way of doing something and feeling empowered. So ultimately, by getting in touch with what you want more of in life and working through those root conflicts, those root issues, whatever it is, emptiness or inability to soothe or whatever is going on, you stop using food or anything else as a way of dealing with deprivation. So I guess it really comes down to that. Compulsive behaviors are often a way of dealing with deprivation, as well as feeling, conflicts and feelings about things that are difficult to face. Once you face them, as Nicole said when she first called in, when you face what's really bothering you, you stop using food for that purpose. Okay. Here's another question. Let me see. I have a couple of questions. I'm going to go with this one. A lot of people have asked me this question, so here's the question from a lot of people. Why does it have all some? It all kind of comes down to this question: why does it have to be an internal emotional thing? Why can't it just be it being food issues? Why can't it just be about willpower? Okay, great question. Willpower is logical. Logic goes along the lines of this. If you want to lose weight, stop eating, eat less, or stop binging, exercise more. That's logical, right? Simple. Not so simple. It's like saying to someone, I know you feel bad because your boyfriend broke up with you, but there's nothing you could do, so just stop feeling that way. Actually, I have an even better analogy than that. It's like saying to someone who's grieving, I know you feel bad because you lost this person, but, you know, grieving is not going to bring them back. So stop feeling that way. Ridiculous, right? Ridiculous. You just can't stop feeling. You can't stop, whether it's a feeling or a behavior. That's because we're humans and we are not driven, to use the word of the day, we are not driven by logic. It is not logical. It is psychological. If you are doing something you do not want to do, such as eating too much, or not doing something that you want to do, such as dieting, then there is a reason for that that needs to be understood. If you're doing something you don't want to do, or not doing something you want to do, there's a reason. And it's really, this is a very psychological, psychoanalytic principle, and I love it because it takes away shame. Because so many people who struggle with food also feel terrible about themselves. They think they lack willpower, but it is not about willpower. You got to figure out why you're eating instead of focusing on that you're eating, instead of focusing on food. And this is what I'm here to help you guys do, right? And I got to tell you, when I first started out, I heard from so many people who told me they'd struggled with their weight for years, sometimes, you know, decades. And with this approach, this taking away the shame and being curious, not critical, and understanding the why, what's eating at them, and then taking steps to change, and cultivating a soother supporter and kind of making their critic smaller, they were finally able to make changes and keep those changes. So I also want to say there's a lot of attention on the brain when it comes to eating issues. Researchers looking for some genetic cause for overeating or pointing to brain chemistry changes as proof that certain food is addictive. The problem is this research leaves out the fact that in addition to our brains, which are just, you know, the physical control centers of our bodies, we have minds. We have minds. We can think. We can reason. We can feel. We can create. We have conflicts. We have an unconscious. We have brains and minds, and one impacts the other. So when you're only focused on what you're doing, that's like focusing on the symptoms, which is like plucking a weed and thinking it is not going to grow back. It's temporary. Yeah, I want everyone to feel better. But there is something deeper going on that needs to be recognized and worked through. So that's what I'm here to help you do. And I hope that you are benefiting from what I'm here to share with you. And if you have any questions, please feel free to write me or message me through Facebook. And I will answer them on the air or feel free to call in. So thank you so much for joining me today. I am here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio. If you like the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review, because the more reviews that I get, the more it shows up in searches and the more people I can help. And I'm all about that. So I would love if you can help me help others as well as yourself. Have a great week, and I will see you next Wednesday.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.